All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. What's happening, Nast?
What's up, Rigorelia? I know one thing, you bailed again on the boys. That's all I'm saying. Guys aren't happy with you. Diener, there's some areas in his backyard. He's got room. You need to show up.
Well, dude,
jerseys came in.
But you can't be switching game time from 5 p.m. to 9:45 p.m. at Hollydale. I got to cruise over an hour to strap him on.
Here we go. You know, no one likes excuses, Riggs. We found a way to do it without you.
Always do.
But tell you what, that Tovey stick's hot. Just saying.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Yeah. Snapping and I'm terrible. So, got it. I don't know if anyone was counting, but one and two apples, one G2 apples, but I'm terrible. Night. I was so bad. Oh, my God. I was so bad. I suck, but it's fun.
In quicksand.
Oh my God, I wasn't moving my feet, cruising. The worst is watching after. You know, when you're playing men's league, it's like, oh man, I was buzzing. Then I'm watching, I'm like, I can't even show anyone the video. It's so bad. No, I did. I was feeling a little winded the other day.
Yeah?
I don't know why. I don't know if it's winded. I just couldn't get rest is something I do need. But I'll get that when I die, which could be soon the way I go. But anyway, missed you. Boys are not happy with you.
No, I know.
Could be some hazing going on next week.
I got to redeem myself.
Jerseys, new jerseys. Yeah, you have to pop a couple in. Jerseys are in, or you know, yours was just sitting there waiting. You saw the video.
I saw the video.
I should post it. Guys, you're like, hey, good game, Riggs. Oh, yeah, not here. Jersey's here, but he's not.
I was there in spirit.
you were asleep.
I was asleep. I was definitely asleep.
But anyway, we had a good time. Missed you. Hopefully you'll make one of the games this year.
I'm working.
Big Big week, man. Hockey started last night. National Hockey League started last night, and the Flyboys are starting Friday. Pretty excited about that.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. A lot of hype. Preseason was so-so, but and it's hard to really gauge in preseason action, right? Obviously, you're not going with your full lineup, and there's not a whole lot of chemistry, so tough to evaluate. But I know there's a lot of hype around Flyers and in Philly and around the league. So pumped. We're here finally. You know, a lot of additions and pieces added and subtracted, and here we are. All the talk and all the preparation. Friday night,
finally get to see it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Friday night, we'll be there.
Yeah, we will.
Ready to rock and roll, man.
Yeah, it'd be nice to be around the fans and be at the building, some energy and all the noise, obviously. Well, so
you know it's gonna be buzzing. It's gonna be buzzing.
Yeah, it'll be the first time in over 2 years here now that you're gonna actually have some normalcy. I'm still gonna be rocking the masks, I think, but nonetheless, maybe be a ton of Philly people flying around, buzzing around, and
yeah, man.
Checking out what the Flyers have to offer. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm pumped, man.
Hey, Nast.
Yeah.
Are you ready to take your game outdoors?
Well, I think you saw that I was a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I did. For over 50 years, Mylick has been taking this game of hockey to the streets, driveways, and cul-de-sacs across the globe.
They have. And you know what's funny? You couldn't wear any shin guards when we had our tournament, but I'm telling you right now, they're featuring out the MK5 shin pads that are the number one selling off-ice hockey shin pads in the world, Riggs, in the world. And they also have a line of hockey goals ranging from lightweight PVC goals all the way up to regulation pro steel goal.
Oh, yeah. And Nasty, remember the old orange ball that started it all?
I have a few.
Yeah, you have a few. I know you do. It has evolved into multiple hockey balls scientifically designed to perform consistently in a variety of weather temperatures.
Dude, I noticed that because we were freezing the ones, which was really cool. And they also, Riggs, they have a wide selection of hockey sticks for any type of playing surfaces.
Yep. And Mylick also has all your off-ice hockey needs covered.
That's right, brother. So visit mylick.com and use promo code Nasty Knuckles to get 10% off your next order. Mylick, hockey starts here.
You know it, Nast. I think it's time we tap into episode 44 and listen to the Rocket, Rick Tocchet.
My man.
Yeah. Great interview.
Let's do it, baby. Let's
do it. Yep. Here we go. Welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. This week, we are so lucky to have an absolute legend in hockey, a Flyers legend, the newest inductee to the Philadelphia Flyers Hall of Fame, Mr. Rick Tocchet, Rocket Tocchet. What's up, brother?
A legend in my own mind, right? Good to be with you guys, man. I listen to you guys all the time. Got some good guests. Listen to Chief. I had to... He's got his teeth in when he speaks. When I played with him, remember he had those teeth? Never understand what he was talking about.
Just hear me watching him on the bench when I was a kid. I just used to laugh. He had no teeth, and he was always standing up yelling. And I said, "Fuck, man, you are always standing up screaming." He goes, "Your old man was giving me those fucking pills." He goes, "I was so wound up, and I never got on the ice. I couldn't. I had to do something." He said,
"Oh, yeah, that's right. He used to get wound up pretty good." Yeah, Chief. You know, you guys can all say this. I mean, I love those type of guys. Great teammates. Great, you know, unselfish guys. And he does the same thing with St. Louis Blues. He's a great coach. I think they're having a really good year this year. I really do. They acquired some guys. I think they're going to be the top of the Central, them in Colorado. Wow.
Interesting. I hope so too. Yeah. I mean, Chief has a way of getting these guys to work. I mean, much like the way you're wired, I think it's meat and potatoes, obviously tons of analytics these days, but I think he found a way to get to these guys. So it'd be interesting how this plays out.
You got to be careful with analytics. Like every, I was asked, and I do, there's some things that you know, there's information as a coach you want, But then there's a lot of pages where you just want to, you know, throw it away. Right. So you just gotta, you just gotta kind of dive into some stuff. But you can't manage or coach the game or manage your team on all analytics. I think it's dangerous, but there is a place for it. No question.
Yeah, I agree. It can be very dangerous. There's a fine line there, like you said, because I coached with the Phantoms for 7 years, and it got heavy analytics, you know, probably even more now. But it's breaking the game apart way too much, in my opinion. And there's nothing that really kind of gets past the old eye test, right? The energy test that you really can't quantify, right? So, but there's pieces there. They're valuable, no doubt.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
So a new gig for you, hey? Eh? That's gonna be exciting.
Yeah. So when I lost out on a couple of head coaching job interviews, I had some teams reach out to be an associate coach, and I wrestled around with it. Actually, my girlfriend and my agent actually they kind of said to me, "Hey, man, TNT called to go do a test," and I wasn't really gonna do it, Riley and Massey, because I was like, I just competitive fire to get back into coaching, but. I kind of wrestled around. I went to the test. They liked me. And then I kind of waited. What's going to move the needle if you ever want to be back the head coach? And I really enjoyed TNT. I mean, what a first-class operation what they got. I get to work with Gretz, which is great. And Biz is there now. And Anson Carter and Liam McHugh. So we just had a rehearsal the other day. A lot of fun. Had a good time. And they're real loose. It's almost like they want like a podcast kind of, you know, they want you to just, you know, they don't want the pure hockey show where you just, you know, oh, here comes down the guy, you know, he shoots the puck on the top shelf, you know, where the peanut butter stuff, you know, like that's just boring, right? I think the average fan wants to hear some stories. They want you to demonstrate, and they want you to have a little bit of humor. So they told me right from the start, they don't want a hockey show. They want an entertainment show that covers hockey.
I think that's great because like, the guys you just mentioned, you guys have great personalities and you could sit there and read and say like, chop it up to what everyone else is doing. But I think that's great that you guys are allowed to kind of just be yourself. And it kind of shows people that may not know you, like we're lucky enough to know you, you know, your personality. Hey, this guy's pretty fucking funny. And, you know, he gets it.
You guys are involved in big games, right? Pressure games. And sometimes there's some funny stories or there's funny things that happen. It's just not all pressure. And they want to hear like, you know, what's the, you know, what happens in between periods and overtime, you know, like, you know, or is there anything in a pressure situation, you know, pressure situation that happened? Is there anything that's funny that happened on the bench? Absolutely. And I think they want to hear that. They just don't want to hear, you know, the straightforward stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice cast. You guys kind of complement each other, a little bit of everything there. And that's a hell of a setup, too. I saw a little bit of your little testing. Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah. It's like I said, they're first class. So I'm anxious to start here on the 13th.
And it seems like, if you don't get the coaching job you want, it seems like a natural transition. Not that it needs to be a long-term play. I mean, but it's something to keep you in the game, stay visible. You're still talking hockey and having some fun, right?
Right.
I've heard you speak before about, assistant coaching jobs versus head coaching jobs. And you want a head coaching job, right? I mean, you're a head coach now. And, the assistant served its purpose, you know, probably as a learning tool and whatnot. But, there's only a handful of coaching jobs that come up every year. So it's a tough
thing. Right. But I will tell you, and I've been a head coach and stuff. And, I've been a player. You know, assistant coach's role is huge, and they put little fires up for the head coaches. So I take that very serious. You know, assistant coaching, I remember I was in Pittsburgh with Mike Sullivan. It was great. Your job is to help the head coach. So, you know, he deals with a lot of pressures and stuff. And if you can be there to put little fires out, deal with the players and help them out. So it's a huge job, you know, and those guys grind. I mean, you were there. You're an assistant coach. You grind every day. Nasty, you've seen all the assistant coaches. You've been part of the Flyers for 25 years. How many assistant coaches do you know? Yeah. It's kind of a job where, you know, you got to earn the trust of the players. You know, I always tell the story. I was in Pittsburgh and early on in my assistant coach role there. And I remember I was talking to Crosby and I said, hey, Sid, the day you guys start calling me a pigeon, I will quit. I said, no player will ever call me a pigeon, man. I will quit. You know, because, you know, we used to, you know, as players, there'd be some assistant coaches and we say, this guy's a pigeon.
Yeah, all right.
And I said, he laughed. And, you know, I'm not going to name the guy, but I don't really explode too much as an assistant coach on the bench. And this one guy, I didn't get along with him the first couple of months. He's a very good hockey player, and we just didn't hit it off. And he came off one time, and Sully told me to go talk to this guy because he did something wrong. And I went to, and really respectfully, and I go to the guy, hey, man, like, you know, it's man-on-man during 4-on-4, and he started, like, you know, motherfucking me right on the bench. And that was my aha moment. Like, all the players are watching this. Do I take this, and then I become a pigeon, or do I go, and I just lit into this guy. And a couple of guys had to get in between me, and the guy didn't want no part of me. But the next day, the guy came up to me, the player, and apologized. And since then, we've been, you know, very good friends since. So,
oh, that's awesome.
You know, sometimes you got those aha moments where you got to make a decision, and that was my pigeon. I didn't want to be a pigeon. That
No, who does?
Yeah, right.
No, but there's a fine line there. Yeah, right. I mean, it's easy to be kind of maybe falling into that category where you don't get the respect you deserve, right? Because you're not the head guy. But it's such an important job, it really is. Like you said, like there's that, you're that bridge between the head coach. You got to bring out the oven mitts sometimes and get these guys feeling comfortable. And
right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
There's like a lot of stuff that goes in on it behind the scenes that most fans and people don't see. But it's important.
Listen, I don't know, right? Like, you know, it's an emotional game. Like, so yeah. I don't care if a player comes off and gets mad at me or you know, and respectfully, you know, gives it to you. Like, you know, you can say to a player, hey, he comes off and, you know, he might yell, hey, talk, that's not my man, or blah, blah, start screaming. I get it. I've been there before, but I've never really, you know, it's funny. Who was I talking to the other day? And he said, I forget the player, he said that he has told a coach to fuck off. I've never told a coach to fuck off. Like, turn around and say, go. I've never done that in my career. I might have got mad. You know, I might have went after Mike Keenan a couple of times, but other than that, I was always respectful in that way, you know. But I have no problem a player getting upset and you know, and being mad at their coach. That's okay. It's part of the game. It's a tough sport.
Yeah. And there's a difference between just being emotional and telling your coach to fuck off, right? I mean, that's like, for my opinion, crossing the line of a deliberate lack of respect. Like, you can still control your emotions enough to just whatever, just be angry or whatever, but not cross that line.
And most of the guys, you know, if they do, the next day they apologize. Like, right. So it's part of the bridge. I'm not a guy that keeps things personal. So,
right.
And I know a lot of coaches, Chief and Travis Green are buddy of mine, and they're the same way. They say the same thing. If a player gets out of, usually the next day they apologize, you
for
know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Chief told me a good story. I won't say the player's name, but I don't think you would care. But he took one of his main guys out of the lineup a couple years ago, and he brought him in to tell him, you know, before practice, said, "Listen, you're not playing tonight." And the guy went apeshit. He's like, "You know, fuck that. I'm playing." And he's like, "Oh, no, you're not. You're gonna skate after. You're gonna practice tomorrow, and you'll be back in." And the guys, fuck you, fuck this. He said he left the office, came back in, gave him more shit, and then he left, and he said he was the hardest working guy in practice. He did the bag skate, worked the hardest the next day, and he went on a 9-game point streak, and he came to Chief and said, "You were fucking right, man."
Yeah.
"You were right." He goes, because Chief said, "Watch the video. There's clips on the computer. Right. Go right, watch them right. And tell me, you know, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm just telling you, you're not playing." And then, you know, this guy, you know, he was man enough to say, "Hey, coach, you're right." You know,
and I love that. You know,
exactly.
And look at the karma. You know, the guy gets 9 points game streak, right? So there's karma there, and the guy, you know, kind of looked at himself in the mirror. It's great.
Yep. And he wasn't like a young guy either. The guy's been around and pretty good player. So
yeah,
I thought that was a pretty cool story. But I know you're like, from everyone I've talked to and being lucky enough to know you, like, I know players love playing for you, man. Like, and I think that's, you and Chief are a lot alike. And it's funny. I don't know about Wayne Gretzky as a coach, like you do. I know you worked with him, but I'll tell you one thing. He did the All-Star game when I was fortunate enough to do it in 2017. And I had him and Koff. Like, you can't ask for better. You can't ask for better, like, two guys. And the thing about them that was amazing was, they actually stood back with me in this little back room where I had a skate sharpener almost the whole day. And, you know, you're just like almost like they make you feel like you do, like just one of the guys, and just like you guys are normal because you're normal human beings, obviously, but you are elite people from the NHL. But I tell you, Gretz on the bench. So we get on the very first game, Justin Faulk, who plays for Chief now.
Oh, so
you only have 3D. So they start the game off, and I think Faulk may have missed an assignment or something happened. they score, and he comes off the ice, and I was standing in between Wayne and Paul Coffey, and Gretz looks over and he goes, "Cough," and Cough looks over, and he points at him, he goes, "He's done." Now you got to play the rest. It was like the first 30 seconds. He goes, "He's done. Set him down." Like that. Call starts dying, laughing. I'm just like, this is fucking great, man. I felt like I was like with you and Chief. You know, like it was just how you guys would be.
Yeah. But you missed the best part though, Bastard. He goes like this. So Koff's like, you know, so Faulk was about to go out, and Koff goes, "Hey, Fokker, Gretz doesn't want you going out there." So Koff threw him under the bus, Gretz under the bus, right?
Yeah,
but you know those all-star games, everybody's tripping each other, right? So that was hilarious.
That was one of my best days, as far as that, you know. It's obviously it's not as a pressure-packed thing, but I'll tell you one thing, Gretz wanted to win. He kept saying all day, "Hey, like we got to win this. We can win this thing, boys." You know, like, and I was
because he wanted the $100,000.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. I said, "Hey, did the pigeon equipment guys get any of that?" Get any of that? But it was awesome. And Wayne Simmons, who was playing with us, ended up being MVP, and he had a great day. It was just it was an awesome weekend.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But it's kind of funny. It just reminds me of, you know, how limpy Chief is. Like, I know a couple of years ago, it was the year they won the cup because they had Pietrangelo, and long story short, he's telling me about the night. I saw the highlights, and he called me. I was in Pittsburgh, and I was going over to a football game, going to tailgate. And I said, "Oh, I just saw your highlights." And, you know, Chief, he goes, "Oh, that was cute, wasn't it?" He's like, he goes, "I had to call a timeout. We blow, you know, we're up 4-1. They score again. And the boys come over the bench," and he's like, they're kind of looking at him, and he goes, "Oh no, I'm just letting Larkin rest so he can tie it up since you guys are letting him do whatever the fuck he wants to do out there," you know, and shit. So the boys are just kind of got their head down. How do you not laugh when your coach says that to you? Right. And then you got Ott sitting there, and he's a smart ass too. Right. Like, so he's kind of giggling. Larkin scores, ties the game up. He actually did, but they win in overtime. So he's telling me all this stuff, and he says, he goes, "I'm pissed off." I walk out to the hallway, and I see Petro talking to someone, and he calls him over, and he's like, did you want us to trade you to Detroit?" And he's like, "What? No, well, fuck no." And he goes, "Oh, you were playing for him tonight. So I just want to make sure." He's shaking his head. Right. But anyway,
that's
Chief though, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty good
stuff.
Yeah. As far as your coaching goes, I mean, I know you're, you know, under the guise of a player's coach. I mean, you communicate well. You seem like a simple guy, you know, just as far as philosophy goes. But, you know, going back to when you played, you had some hard coaches. I mean, it was a little different philosophy, obviously, the way coaches communicate with the players. I mean, do you want to talk a little bit about like that ancient way of coaching versus like the more modern way is communication and how
it
in NHL?
Yeah. Yeah, like you know, my first coach, Mike Keenan, like he really helped my career. Like I love the guy, but you know, there's also I don't like using the word hate, but there's some times where I really despise him, right? But that was his way. He probably could, you know, I've always said this, and we've talked to Mike. He probably wouldn't be able to do the same tactics nowadays. Back then, nowadays, probably not. But he got the most out of it. You know, we've had some legendary brouhahas, me and him, but. He was ahead of his time. You know, he's the guy that started the short 40-minute high tempo practices. Everybody got their own water bottle with their number on. Like he started all that. So, team dinners. Like I remember the 80s. Oh, wow. Like and Derek, your dad will tell him. We used to have a million team dinners. Like I had buddies on other teams. They never had team meals. So that was the Flyers' philosophy. You know, obviously, Mike had a team credit card. So, you win 4 or 5 in a row, we'd give the guys a credit, go to a bar or something. So Mike knew how to do that stuff, but also, when it's business, boy, he was tough. You know, he'd get on a guy. I remember he skated Scott Mellenby in the Montreal Forum. he had Scotty go from blue line to blue line. And with, so we had to do it six times with about a 10 second break. You got to remember, Scotty was going to play that night. This was a morning skate. And for about 20 minutes, and Scotty finally, he was down. And I went to give him water, and he slashed the water bottle in my hand. And Scotty played that night. He was my roommate. Scotty slept all afternoon. I think Scotty might have got a couple assists or something. We beat Montreal. But it was just his way, right? He did that to me a couple of times. And then, you know, then you move up to guys like Scotty Bowman. Like, didn't talk to him much. That was just Scotty. But behind the bench, taskmaster, he's a hockey savant, right? He just knew who to put together at the right time. You know, he's a genius behind the bench. But, you know, he wasn't a guy that communicated well in the sense that I really enjoyed playing for him. Jim Schoenfeld, I really like Jim. Like, he was like a father figure, big guy. You know, he was a good coach for me too. So those guys I really enjoyed playing for, because they all had different ways, approaches of dealing with players or coaching your team. Yeah. And today's game, you know, I look at, you know, I love talking to Chief and Travis Green, and I talked to John Cooper, pick his brain. There's certain guys that you like to, Spuddy Gallant, I talked to the other day. So there's a, you know, there's a fraternity there where you pick their brains. Hey, in these situations, what do you think? And, you know, they're good enough friends to share their ideas. So that's what I try to understand, you know, all these different coaches, what they do.
Yeah. And there's more of like an actual like conversation going on with the player and coach versus back in the day, I guess it's more like coach, whatever the coach says goes.
Right.
Dialogue. And, you know, obviously the technologies now, there's so much breakdown, and you text the guy. Talk about goals that are happening in NHL and stuff like that. So it allows that. But I feel like there's just more dialogue. There's a little bit more of like listening to the player versus just, you know, talking to the player. That's at least from what I saw anyways. And
if you're dead on, Riley. Dead on. It's I call it a partnership. You're a partner. Yeah. Like, it's not a dictatorship. Yeah, I'm the head coach. And excuse me, there's a lot of decisions I have to make. But at the end of the day, man, it's a partnership. Like, you know, hey, boys, we're going to do this kind of forecheck, blah, blah, blah. And you might have a guy pick up, you know, raise his hand or call you. Hey, listen, why can't we have F3 play a little bit in, you know, closer to the far post, like when we come on our forecheck? And you got to listen to them because they have good points, right?
Yeah.
Now, at the end of the day, I mean, the head coach has the final decision, and hopefully everybody respects it and does it. But definitely there's a partnership and the way you deal with players. The one thing I really can appreciate is I played every role in hockey. I was a fourth line guy. Third liner, second and a first liner. I was a guy that didn't dress some games. So I kind of understand everybody's position. Maybe some other coaches don't. You know, a guy that doesn't play, you know, he's one injury or one guy being out. And I've had some guys over my career that didn't play, but they were major reasons why we won a Stanley Cup. They scored a winning goal or they blocked a shot. So it's important for the coach to make sure that they have time for those type of guys too. It's just not, hey, you know, you can sit and talk to Sidney Crosby for 2 hours all day, but you know, if you're not you're not in the room there or on the ice with the other guys, I mean, you know, you're affecting their career too. So I take that very personal to help guys, you know, stay in the league, but also be part of a winning team.
Right. Yeah. It's important stuff.
What do you talk, like, speaking about like going back to coaches, and what are your like thoughts on the game like now? Like, obviously it's been changing for years, but what are your thoughts? I obviously that new rule with the cross checking, when I'm not even sure it's cross checking if a guy kind of pushes, but and who knows how long they'll call that, but if they do, you're gonna have a lot more power plays than we already have. I just wondered what your thoughts were on the game.
Yeah, I think there's a little subjective there. Like, if I'm a ref, it's funny, we talked about TNT, we showed, I think it was the Flyer game. There was two cross checks, there was two power play goals because of the cross check. One I thought was warranted. I forget who did it, kind of extended his, and the guy went down. I would have called that one with the new rule, right? But there was another one, I think, was it the Flyers who got it? The guy, he tried to kind of hold him up a little bit in the corner, like a little bit of a battle, and he got it. I don't think that was a penalty, right? So the ones I don't like, and Riley, you were a forward, you understand, is when you're in front and that, you know, you got a guy behind you, and as the shot's coming, he cross checks it. You go down, and the fight, you know,
oh yeah, it's dangerous.
Yeah,
I'll be honest. That's most of the fights I had in my career is when guys like Stevens or Dan, those guys did that. Then you're pissed, right? You go after them. That's what I'd like to see eliminated. If I'm a ref, I'm calling that every time in the corners. I tell my defense, you know, stick on puck. But once you get guys like Crosby and McDavid close to the boards, you got to get two hands on their hip. You know, I don't think you have to cross check it, but you got to get in there, right? And I think if they're going to take that away, man, it's going to be hard for a defenseman to really battle in the corners. I mean, it'll be keep away all day. You know, how do you defend those guys, right? They're going to have the puck all day. So I think it's subjective. I think the real good refs know, hey, that's a real cross check. That's not a cross check. And I think it'll sort. I hope it sorts its way out as the season goes on.
It's almost like the guys, you want them to be able to battle and fight for ice, right? Like it's, if you can't put your hands on them, I mean, now, like it's, like you said, they're just going to be tic-tacking around you. Like it's, I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, because, you know, I get really like a hockey nerd when I talk about this stuff. Like, and I was talking to some refs about this. You know, you're in the corner and the puck goes up to the point and you're a forward that trying to get to the net. And the defenseman just, you know, he puts a stick there and holds you. I get they want to clean that up, okay? But the closer to the net, you know, the guy passes it, you know, around the trapezoid. He throws the defenseman. Now he wants to get in front. Now it's on. Like, I think that defenseman's allowed it. It's a one-on-one battle. I don't want this guy to scream our goalie. You know, you got to box that guy out. So there's a difference, right? I think in the corners, when I get to the trying to get the net, I don't think a defense can just hold the guy the whole time. And I think, but the closer to the net, that's where the battle is. And I think good referees know the difference. Yeah. Some other guys, they don't, and they just panic and they say, "Oh, they're going to call it every time." Or even in, you know, in front of it on a battle, they'll call it like an interference call. I mean, that's a battle. I mean, they're going to get right in front of your goalie's face on a shot. You know, you want to box out. So those are the two examples I think I'd like to see a little clearer sometimes.
Because that line is fine, but there is a difference. Again, it's such a high skill game. If you give them too much space now because you're trying to play on this side of it, like you said, like the McDavids, all these guys rolling off you, like now you're on the backside of them. There's no more boxing out, and there's a big difference between a cross check in front of the net when a guy's shooting the puck versus, you know, a puck coming, like you said, like a situation where the guy's coming in the net and I'm in a mini box out. I'm not sure that's a cross check.
Yeah,
it's a deliberate cross check, but
sure.
We'll see how it plays out. I mean, I feel like early the refs are a little bit excited to call these just to like get them under their belt or whatever. I remember the old obstruction holding and stuff when they implemented that. It was like everything was called, and then over time, I think it just kind of like works itself out, but it'll be interesting. You don't want to change too much around around the net puck battles, right? Because that's where like the meat and potatoes is. You know, it's like, I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
go ahead, Ness. I was just gonna still touch it on coaching. Way back when you were in Tampa, which seems like forever ago. And it was kind of, I remember the one day, like you ended up being a head coach there. And, but I remember coming to play you guys and Antero Nedimaki was there. And I was tight with, he played with Riley. And
sure. Yeah.
Nitty was I love Nitty. He was just so funny and good dude. So I think you had, was it Wes Walls, one of your coaches, and Oatsy. So I see Nitty, I'm coming in, I see Nitty, he's like going to the ice, so I kind of go to your bench, the Tampa Bay bench, and he's sitting down and we're talking, and Walls is just whipping around the ice, just buzzing, like, I don't know why, he's like, he's just skating around, he's fucking shooting biscuits, and then you see Oatsy, he's got a few of the boys out there early, and he's like in his spot where he used to feed Hall Cam Neely, so... I'm like kind of like watching all this and I'm like, oh, you know, this is cool. And I'm like, who's that? He goes, Wes Walls. He goes, he thinks he's better than every player on the team. Like he basically basically says that. And I said, well, he can fucking fly. I said, I know who he is, but, and he goes, oh yeah. He goes, and Oatsy over here, he thinks he's passing to Cam Neely in the Garden for one timers. He says that's exactly what he thinks he's doing. I don't think he realizes. I was dying, man. But I was just going to ask you, I know it was kind of a, I don't want to say shit show, but a shit show, the ownership, everything was kind of crazy there. What was that like for you? And Stammer was a kid, literally a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like it's funny, like the two head coaching stints is, you know, the ownership has been a little bit, you know, I don't want to say unstable, but it's kind of like, you know, that's why I appreciate being, you know, going to Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, teams with just like great ownership, right? So it didn't have, and the first star of that whole franchise is Jeffrey Vinnick, the new owner that went in. He's the guy that fired me, but he's done a hell of a job. I know he brought Stevie Eiserman in, and then he drafted, you know, Vasilevsky and all those guys, and right. You know, the rest is history. But yeah, it's hard. And Riley, you know, as a player, when you have a lot of outside noise, it's really hard as a player and a coach to keep that noise out. You know, you try. And I know in Arizona, the players did a great job of keeping the noise outside, you know, a couple ownership changes and a couple GM changes. And, you know, your job is to try to keep the team focused. But yeah, I mean, the good thing with Stamkos, I remember we had Gary Robertson. He was, you know, at the end of his career, but he was a workout freak. Great guy, Robs. And I remember Stammer, you know, he was kind of strong. He's a skinny guy. And I said to Stammer, I called him in one day and I talked to his agent. I said, listen, I'm going to play him like two of every three games or three of every five games. And the games he doesn't play, we're going to get him in the gym. We got to get him stronger. You know, we got to get his core stronger. He's got to get some, you know, muscle on his ass and his legs so he doesn't get, you know, tossed around. And I'll tell you, near the end of the year, he was scoring goals and you could see him coming. The next year, he scored 50 goals. So,
yeah.
And the one thing I was proud of our staff, and, you know, we made that decision, you know, hey, we're going to do this for the first pick. You know, we might have got criticized, but in the long run, you can ask Stammer, it was the best thing for him. So that was one thing I was proud about, is doing that. And, you know, obviously Stamkos has scored a million goals since then. I'm not saying because of that, but I think for him getting stronger and not trying to force him to play every game, even though we weren't a good team.
Right.
Yeah, that's a ballsy decision. I think Stammer's still working with Gary Roberts too, if I'm correct. I mean, he obviously built a relationship there, but I think that's probably one of the biggest things when you get young guys, 18 years old, coming out of juniors, is the strength, right? And if they don't have that man strength, if you want to call it that, there's only one way to really get it is to put the work in, right? I mean, you can play all the games in the world, but I mean, you're going to go through 82 games, and then you're not really getting any stronger during the season. But that's a pretty interesting little fact there, because he probably didn't want to hear that at the time, but make him a better player in the long run.
Well, I mean, you know, you gotta remember these guys are coming to you and they're playing 30 minutes tonight in junior and they're getting two goals a game, right? So it's hard for them to understand that, but he took it, like he understood. His agent was really good at times. Said, yeah, we understand. And today's players, same thing. It's I was telling Mike Johnson asked me to talk to Portland Winterhawks the other, this was last year. And, you know, sometimes I do that in a Zoom call, the players. I just said to them, like, even for the top guys, the guys that score 60 goals in junior every year or 50, like, you got to make sure you have another, like, club in the bag. You just can't come in and I'm a goal scorer and that's it. Because, you know, there's some players that were big scorers in junior and they don't score like that in the NHL. They might be just become 15 goal scorers, but they worked on their defensive part of the game, or the great face-off guy, or unreal penalty killer. So you better have another tool in the bag. You know, if you're just going to rely on, hey, I'm a shooter and a scorer, and which I understand that's your forte, but you better have something else in that bag, because if you can't score, and the other parts of your game are lacking, you're probably not going to be in the NHL that long.
Yeah, that's so true. And I've seen that a lot when I was coaching the minors there, is the guys have that mentality where, like, you know, I was that go-to guy, and then all of a sudden they're playing in a more of a distinct role on the third and fourth line, and they have a hard time because they haven't been trained or they haven't put any pride into playing the defensive side of the game, or, you know, really, you know, said, like, doing something extra above and beyond just scoring goals. And you're going up against the best goal scorers in the world, you better be a damn good goal scorer if you're going to be on those top two lines and try and think you're going to put up 50 a year.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting dynamic. I think coaching, especially as assistant coach, as we talked about earlier, is just like a lot of psychology, right? It's just a lot of, like, conversations about, like, Well, it's, there's an ego component, and it's, but there's also this getting over the hurdle of you got to bring more to the table every single day, because if you're not scoring, what are you doing? You know, and if you're not doing that, then you're probably not in the lineup, and you probably line up in the back into the minor leagues. But a lot of psychology, you know, because you got to get these guys to think a different way, because when you're in that bubble, you know, like, not that I scored 60 goals in junior, but, you know, close to 30, you know, and to get out, breaking out of that mold of like, holy shit, like, I'm going up against some serious goal scorers here, and I can't just like rely on thinking that I'm actually a good offensive player. So
right.
It's hard for guys to wrap their head around, you know, because it's a blow to their pride a little bit. But I think the guys that take it the best are the guys that evolve the most.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. You're true. And the psychology, I mean, I always tell this story. I don't know if you guys heard of it before. Like, with Phil, I was pitching with Phil Kessel. I mean, he's the beauty. I love that guy. He's a different guy. And everybody loves him because he's got a different personality. I mean, you don't want everybody to have the same personality. It'd be a boring team, right?
Right.
So I just remember Phil, he's eating, Ray's grumping about something the night before. And that's just Phil. And I go, come on, Phil, let's go. Right in the office. He goes, all right. And he used to call me Ricky, like in front of, like, all right, Ricky, let's go watch video, right?
So all right, Ricky.
So I said, great. He doesn't eat eggs, eh? So he eats the omelet, everything but the eggs. So he's got his bacon and ham and all there. And I go, bring it with you. So we're sitting down. And, you know, what he got for me? And then he starts grumping. And you guys aren't playing me enough. And, you know, I'm letting him vent, right? You know, this and this. And I said, listen, man. I said, you know, you have to have a good practice day. I mean, the last couple of practices, you're kind of loafing up there. He goes, oh, come on, man. And then I could see him getting like a little pissed. Not so much of me, just everything. And I had the ESPN on. You know, they have that World Series of Poker on ESPN 2 sometimes.
Yeah.
So I knew he was getting antsy, and I just go, Phil, did you see that? What happened last night with Phil Ivey or something? I don't know. I made something. He goes, yeah, did you see that? The guy had, you know, the guy overplayed his kings, and he starts talking poker with me, right? And he's a big poker guy, right? And he's good. And I used to play poker, and I know poker pretty well. So we had a conversation for about 2-3 minutes about it. And then I told Jacques Martin, I said, knock on my door about 10 minutes in. And Jock, they talk. We have a meeting with Sully. They go, Phil, man, I got to go. I got to go to the office. And so now I got him down, because he's all happy about poker, right?
Right.
And I go, Phil, you're gonna work today? Probably. Yeah. Okay, talk. I'll work hard today or whatever. So you got to, the reason I'm saying, you got to get these guys on a different level sometimes and think of other ways. And I remember Phil in practice was unreal. And I remember Sully goes, what'd you talk about? I said, poker.
Poker. Yeah,
right. How do you play kings against aces? I said, you know, he just started laughing.
He started laughing.
That was Phil, man. He scored some big goals for the Penguins, I'll tell you that. And,
yeah, no kidding.
But yeah, you gotta deal with different players' personalities. We all have different personalities, and we're not all the same. You know, I don't want 21 Rick Tockett's, to be honest with you, no way. But, you know, you don't want 21 Phil Kessel's. But if you sprinkle everybody in there, you know, you can get a good dynamic in a room.
Yeah. I was able – I've known Phil for a long time. When he first came in, we were at the World Championships together, and I kind of hung out with him. And fuck did I laugh. Just the shit that comes, like, fuck me. Fuck, why are we going to skate? Like, fuck – you know, like, just everything. You know how he is. He's so funny. But I remember the one day when you were still assistant there, I stuck my head out the bench, and you guys were just kind of getting in. Guys were skating around. Well, Phil's leaned over on the boards talking to me, because I was giving him shit. I'm like, oh, my phone must not be working. I didn't get that call for dinner. You know, like, fuck, you big time me every time you come here. That's what he's saying. I was like, you're the big timer, man. So I said, hey, and I always would fuck with him. I did it in Toronto. I've told the story before where I messaged him after a game, and I'm like, hey, bro, great game. He had a couple goals. And he's like, thanks, brother. What's he got, you know, out of the rake, I guess. And I said, hey, quick question. What size pants are you wearing? And why? I mean, I barely hit send. He goes, why? I said, well, are they XLs? They look a little boxy. So the next day, he's in there trying every pair of pants on. He's trying to get a smaller pair of pants. And Pappy in Toronto calls him, dude, don't ever fuck. Leave him alone. Dude, that's the last thing I need is him in there fucking around with shit. So anyway, you guys are kind of getting going. And he's leaned on the boards. And I said, fuck, what's going on with your twigs? He goes, what do you mean? And I said, well, I've been watching, you know, I watch you guys a lot. I am a nerd. I watch a lot of hockey. And I said, fuck, it's like your sticks don't have any pop. And he goes, fuck, that's what I've been saying. They got no pop. Jeez, so no pop. I go down, and as I go down afterwards, I went down to see Tags, and Sid was leaving, and he goes, what were you saying to Phil over there? And I said, oh, I told him this. I said, I always fuck with him. And I told Sid the story about the pants and some other shit at World Championships. He's crying. He's like, oh my God. He goes, dude, he just said his stick had no pop about 50 times in 5 minutes to Tags and to Dana. He's got to get sticks that have pop in them. And we were just dying. But the thing about Phil is, like, people like to, like, I don't know, poke fun at him because the, like, the way, like, his, you know, not in shape. This guy's a freak, man. Like, to me, he's a freak. And you're buddies with Barkley. And I always say, like, I know it's different sports, but I'm a big basketball guy, as you know. Sure. Talk. And I remember when Barkley came out of college, he had a lot of baby fat still on him. He was just big, but the guy could out jump. He was rebounding 7 foot guys. He's 6'4" and a half or whatever.
Sure.
And I kind of, like, always say Phil Kessel's just a freak, man. Like, can skate. Like, I don't know, man, but you've coached him, and he loves you, obviously, as you know.
Yeah, he can throw a football 50 yards. He, you know, I think he's like a 4 or 5 handicap golf. He always wins in the, you know, they have the training camp, the testing, you know, the jumps. He's a
dunk on basketball.
Yeah. I mean, you know, his body fat's a little high, and you know, he's got some, you know, I think it's his body type, and it's hard for him to get it down. You know, at that testicular cancer there. Testicular. And so he is, you know, there's certain things that I think that affects him. So I think he gets a bad rap sometimes. Yeah. You know, listen, I love Phil. Have I got into him? Hey, man, you got to work harder. Right? Of course. I mean, and he'll tell you, but you know, he's, like I said, he's scored some big goals over his career.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he sure has.
You're probably one of those guys too, where, like, you know, I think I heard the story about Marty Brodeur, where, like, I think the 1 year he tried to, like, train in the off season because people were like, "Oh, you got to do some training," and, you know, he blows out his bicep like the first week in camp or whatever. I think, like, Phil, if you, like, got him out of his comfort zone too much with too much work, you're probably, like, you know, he seems like a pretty durable guy for, you know, for over his career. Like, you'd probably be the guy that would blow a hammy or something like that because he just, like, overworked or whatever else, but. He's highly explosive. You know, he said, like, the jumps. I mean, obviously it translates the way he skates. I mean, he's and obviously golfs and whatever else he's doing, throwing footballs, but he's got the technique down. So, I mean, whatever's working, I guess, right? But it's hard to see, like, a guy that's, like, got so much ability and skill and then, you know, not give it that extra juice that, you know, you would give, or, you know what I mean, I would give, because that's the way we're wired. But, you know, whatever. You just got to let people be, I guess, sometimes, and let them stay in their lane, I guess, you know.
He makes me laugh, man. Riles, you were talking about some of the Tillys.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was looking up a couple interesting stats. Flyers leader in Gordie Howe hat tricks, NHL all-time leader in Gordie Howe hat tricks with 18. But I mean, you fought like the toughest dudes, and I was actually watching a couple of your tilts with Kosher and Probert and Neely and Wendell Clark. But I got to ask you on the one on with Probert. Did you line up headbutting him? You might have fought him a couple of times.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. I hit him, but then he headbutted me. So,
oh, yeah.
Well, you know what? Like, you know, I wasn't the biggest guy, you know, so, you know, I had to be a little more tactical. I could throw with both hands, but listen, you know, some guys, you're so, like, a lot of guys, you know, they sit back and they just start swinging it. And I knew if I was going to survive, I had to be a little more tactical. So, yeah, if I felt I could get the advantage and get going, but you know, I thought I was good at just kind of holding guys. I never got knocked out. I'm not saying that's that means I'm a great fighter. I just think that I fought a little smarter sometimes because, you know, you're out there playing a lot. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, I didn't get knocked out. But yeah, a guy like Probert, in the fight, I made a decision. Okay, I had the left that I should have kept going. I hit him a couple of times. I think I kind of surprised him, and he kind of stopped. And I should have kept going, and then we kind of fought again. And I don't know what he did. I don't know. He didn't do anything bad or anything, but I don't know why. I just snapped, and I headbutted him a couple of times. And he was yelling at the linesman. You know, I headbutted him, then he got me. When the ref came over, then he got me. So it was almost like he got caught, right? But yeah, he was a scary individual, man. You know, if you're gonna come off on you're going to come off on his arm and you're going to trade with him, you better make sure you got the first couple in and keep going, because he's, you know, you let him loose, you know, he gets that right hand, or guys like Tony Twister, those guys.
I mean, yeah.
Even Wendell Clark back in the day, they come off that really hard. They're looking to, you know, put their fist right through you. So you better be ready if you're going to come off your, you know, come off those guys' arms.
Yeah, no doubt. And you were good. Like you said you were technical, but I thought you opened up a lot, but you had some strategy around opening up. Like you tucked your chin in, you know, you said you didn't get knocked out. It's probably because you weren't exposing your face and chin. You know, there was, you know, if you're taking them, it's off the forehead or, you know, maybe like the upper orbital bone. But, you know, you had some really good exchanges. Like you weren't just like a boring technical fighter. I mean, you was like old school as it got, man, you know, like a little pit bull.
Yeah, I try. Bro. Yeah. You try. I mean, the one thing is that, you know, I know you were a workout freak. I was too, in the sense that I was a strong guy for, and when I got inside on a guy, I don't care how strong the guy was, I felt safe, right? Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I was watching Reeves teaching one of the Russian kids on the Rangers.
Oh, I saw that.
But it's funny, we talked about it on the panel, and the guys were asking me, and I said, he's not teaching the guy to fight, he's teaching him how to defend himself.
Like, yeah, exactly. You know,
I think that's the most important part, is telling a young guy, hey, listen, I don't care if you, some guys don't have it in them, I don't care if you throw a punch, but here's what you do to, you know, you're in a scuffle, and I think Tampa the other night, and Panthers had a little bit of a knee. Well, it wasn't much, but just to know that, you know, you're a guy that doesn't really know how to fight, but you be able to defend yourself and hold a guy where, you know, I think that then the guy has confidence in himself. You know, if something went down, I know how to defend myself. And I think that was what Reeves was doing. And I forget the Russian kid's name. So he's not really teaching him how to fight. I think it was more just how to defend yourself.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's a good point, because – it's a matter of time before something does happen, and, you know, just knowing where to grab and just like self-preservation, just to not get your ass beat, you know, and really is what it is. Like, the guy's not going out and fighting 10 times a year. I remember, like, you know, Shel Samuelson used to call it, you mean every fight clip or line brawl he's on the ice for, he's just standing there. He's just like, he calls it driving the bus, right? He just grabbed the guy on the shoulders. I mean, obviously he was a big dude, but, like, you know, he wasn't looking to fight. He was just like, not, you know, if he did have to actually engage in a fight, which is not to get beaten up. Just more on, but yeah, no, it's important. You know, I think every player should learn how to defend themselves. That's an important piece of playing a physical sport.
Yeah, I did that Ice Gardens documentary, and I did a couple of, they asked me to interview me on that. I've always said, man, I've always respected, just, you know, I don't call them fighters. They're hockey players that can be able to fight and defend and help their teammates. I got a lot of respect for that. I just used to laugh, like, Louis DeBrus was this, like this a little bit. Remember Snack, Donnie Knockbauer?
Yeah.
Back then. Those guys before games, man. Like, I remember playing with Louis and with Coyotes Phoenix. Like, oh no, they just called up George Laroc. Oh no, excuse me, Donnie Knockbauer. Like, the Buffalo had a couple of tough guys. Like Andy Risto, this guy was a crazy guy. Oh no, they just called up Andy Risto. I'm sitting there, I'm like. And I remember Brownie finally went to Snack. Oh, you shut the fuck up. You're scaring everybody. Yeah. Like, I hate those tough guys. Like, or Keith Tkachuk would, like, go to Jimmy Cummings. Hey, Jimmy, who do you got tonight? Jimmy told Big Walt, will you shut up, man? Stop, right? Because the last thing, you know, Riley, you know, you don't want to think. If you think about it too much, you psych yourself out. Like, you know, you go into a tough building, you know, the night before, I'm at dinner. And I remember Chief and those guys, like, we didn't sit there and talk, hey, man, we got, you just knew. And
right.
Because you want to sleep at night. I don't want,
right,
you know, somebody telling me, hey, man, oh my God, this guy's playing and this is going to happen. Because then it's 24 hours before the game. You're playing the game in your head. You don't sleep. You got to sleep. Like I always say, sleep with the light on during your pregame nap.
yeah, right. You know?
So I just, like, it happens, man. And you know that, hey, there's a guy there. He ran your goalie the game before. You know, I don't think about it until, like, you know, when the warm-up and the game's going to start, because then you feel a little bit fresher in your mind.
Right.
That's just my philosophy, and that's why I don't like talking about a night before a game with my players, or I mean when I was playing with players, because then it just gets people wired up, and probably makes them tired before the game starts.
100%. Yeah, the last thing you want to do is induce fear into your teammates. Your job is to like make them feel more comfortable and, you know, peaceful, right? So you could take on the anxiety and know you're going to fight or whatever, but the last thing you want to do is make guys extra worry. Yeah, right? Defeats the purpose.
We had Marty Biron in Philly for a few years, and Riles knows what I'm going to say. So we're playing in Atlanta, and they had Eric Bolton, right? And he had played with him in Buffalo. So me and Riles were standing talking, and we kind of walk out to the bench. Well, Marty's out there because Marty doesn't stop talking. That's Marty Biron. He's a great guy. And Bolts is like leaned up against the boards because they're going through some drills, and Marty just goes, "Hey, Eric," he goes, "You're going to have to talk to this guy tonight." You know,
oh, yeah.
Riles is like, and then Bolts goes, "I don't want to talk to anybody if I don't have to." You know, like,
yeah, right.
They were like, "Marty, what the fuck is wrong with
you?" Yeah,
right,
yeah. Like, 165 pounds, fucking, and he's being my boxing promoter.
Don King fucking, you know, promotion there.
Oh, so man. Funny.
Well, that's that, you know, Riles and Nash, I think you might have been there. We're playing the Rangers when I was in my last stint with the Flyers, and the game meant nothing. They were out of the playoffs. We were going to the playoffs, and it was our last game where we got into New York. A couple of guys didn't dress. I played, Chief played. Keith Jones was on our team, and they called up that Dale Puritan.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And Puritan had, like, you know, they used to call him the purifier, right? He had the Puritan on his back of his tattoo, and he's skating around in warm-up. He's got the Vaseline, and he's skating a million miles an hour. I mean, he's got called up, right? The Rangers, he's playing in Madison Square Gardens. You know, he's a fighter, right? He's got, I think he had 400, 500 minutes in the minors, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember Chief stretching, and he's, you know, Chief's got laughing, right? And Jones, he's at center ice, and he's stretching, and he goes by, and he yells at the Puritan, "Hey, purifier, you're going to have to deal with this guy tonight, right?" Oh. And Chief's like, "Will you shut up?" So first shift, Puritan starts running around, right? So you know the story.
Yeah.
Whistle stops. Chief stops. Instead of Chief goes to the bench. He goes right to Brian Leach. He goes, "Hey, Leachy," because I'm going to tell you something right now. "I'm going to fight this big idiot, but I'll tell you right now, I'm going to fight you first and him second. If he doesn't settle down, I'm going to knock your teeth out." And I swear, and you can ask Brian Leach, Leachy talks about this. He went over to Puritan. He went and told Puritan, "Hey, settle down, man." And Puritan did. For the whole game, he played hockey, but the last shift, he went after Keith Primo. He couldn't help himself.
He couldn't help himself.
But, oh, yeah, true story. So
that's great.
That's really like the tough guy role back then. What I appreciate is, you know, you get guys wound up. Those tough guys, I did it when I went to the Rangers when I got traded to Pittsburgh. They had Ty Domi and Kosher there, and they were running Mario. I went up to Messier, and I punched him right in the head. I said, "Let's go," because – you know, if you're going to do that, I got to go after your best player. And 100%. You got to do that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Back then. And, you know, yeah, you're going to fight the tough guy, but, you know, hey, why not go after the best player on the other team? If your team's being out of hand, I think that's the best way to.
That is the best way. Stuff. Well, that's the biggest way to send the message, because it's easy to just go fight the tough guy, right? I mean, that's like, that's a given. But yeah, sure. The real message goes is the reason why they're there in the first place, to defend. Their goal scorer is the main guys, right? I mean, and so to me, it's like everyone gets the message. If you just go fight if something happens like that and you just go fight the tough guy, well, no one really learned anything at all, you know? It's like, but as soon as you, you know, bring in the go-to guys, all of a sudden it's a different animal. And right. And then there's a real true respect, you know, breeded right there in the moment.
Yes, exactly.
The Chief told me another story. I'm sure you know it too. He was playing in Calgary, and Aaron Downey was just buzzing around doing all kinds of shit. And Chief was in the box, and so time he gets out, there was no time, but he said, "I skated over to Mike Madonna, and I said, 'We play you next week. You're fucking dead.'" He's like, "That fucking guy." Chief said, "I swear to God, we go to Dallas. We're playing Dallas, and Downey's not even doing drills. He's skating up down the red line, apologizing to everyone." That's what she told me. I mean, I don't know how true it is. I mean, well, I believe him.
He's such a genuine guy.
He told Madonna, "I'm going to fucking knock your teeth down your throat because of this kid." and he said Downey was literally saying, "Hey, guys, sorry about last week."
He got pee-pee slapped by Mike.
Yeah. Well, same, just like he was saying with Leach, man. They don't want to have that shit happen to him.
Yeah, well, that's why I just, you know, when a good game, a good, like, contact game. It's a really aggressive game, but goals and stuff. And it's there's a lot of good stuff. And the tough guys on the other team are, and, you know, they respect each other. You know, it's not like they're going to fight each other right there because it's a good game. It's the guys that go start stuff and then they stop and they kind of, you know, they look at their tough guy in their team. Hey, go, you know, hey, help me out. Like, you know, the fire starters, right? You know, right. You got a good game. There's no reason, you know, Probert, it's a good game. And all of a sudden this guy, you know, running Stevie Eiserman from behind, or, you know, he's going behind Probert, you know, sticking his stick in the back of his knee because he knows he's not going to fight. But all of a sudden, you know, then he's looking for the tough guy to protect him. Those guys I didn't like, I remember a couple of guys that had talked about, hey, if you're going to do that, man, you better answer your own bell. I mean, I'll help you out on a good situation. But that, to me, is not a good situation. And so we used to call them fire. You know, I'm sure they call them today fire starters, man. You're starting to fire and you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, yeah, it's a big difference between you actually answering the bell and then maybe someone else helping as well, but you starting the fire and then just disappearing and then someone else manage your shit. That's a different animal. That's just completely disrespectful, in my opinion, because what's the point, right?
What you're doing? Exactly. Yeah.
How was, real quick, how was Schoenfeld as a coach? Did you like Shoney?
Yeah, I really like Shoney a lot. He, you know, I talked to him actually a couple months ago. It's one of those things with old coaches, right? That you played for. Like, you could go months or like years without talking, and then when you do, the memories come back. You know, like, you know, Shoney, I remember he, you know, he's a big guy, and I remember in Arizona, Phoenix, we didn't have a weight room there because we were at that old America West. Yeah. And he said, all right, everybody grab a 25-pound weight. We're going to go in the parking lot at the practice rink. It was like a dumpy practice rink. So we're in the parking lot. You know, it's like 90 degrees out. We got our shorts on, getting the raise. And, you know, Shoney's that. It's almost like an aerobic truck. He's in the front. He had to, okay, do what I do. So, you know, we're doing this with the weights. We're doing curls. You know, a couple of minutes, like Bob Corker, Craig Janney, this is easy. You know, 25-pound. All of a sudden, like 6 minutes in, these guys, they couldn't even lift this thing. Shoney's going like this. Shoney for 40 minutes, man. He had that weight and didn't stop. You know, we tried to keep up with him. But he was that type of guy. Like, he was just he was a man. He had, if you had a bad game, you know, he'd let you have it. But the next day, man, he'd call you in. It was like a father figure. So I really respected Shoney the way he coached. We had some good teams there under him. You know, I can't believe he got fired. He shouldn't have got fired. We lost to St. Louis in game seven there. We were up 3-1. But Shoney ended up getting fired, which I can't believe he did. He was good for our team.
Yeah. Chief has a lot of good things to say. He told me a couple of funny stories about Shoney. He said he was kind of a smart ass a little bit sometimes, you know, which Chief is. So he said he kind of liked it. But
yeah, that's the funny stories back then. Like, as a coach, I don't see those funny things like when I played, like the Shoney and Keith Jones story where, you know, they butted heads, right? And then Shoney goes, I had enough of you. Hey, Jonesy, you go in the office, you pretend me, you're me, and I'll become you, right? Because Jonesy used to whine all the time. Yeah. So Shoney goes outside, he knocks on the door, and Jonesy's in Shoney's office. So Jonesy's got his feet up, right? The door opens, and Shoney's play rolling as Jonesy. Hi, Shoney, I want to talk to you. And Jonesy's like, come on in, kid. Put your feet up. What's going on? So then Shoney goes, I'm tired. We practice too hard. I'm not playing enough. So Jonesy was showing Shoney. He goes, you know what, kid? You're right. Get out of here. Take the day off. Shoney got so mad at him. He goes, get out of my office. So I love that.
That is classic.
A few Jones stories, man. He just I mean, we could sit here and talk a million stories about Jonesy, but that was one of my funny stories with Shoney when they reversed roles as the coach and the player.
Chief told me he, he would have been in Wash. He had him in Washington, and quickly he was up at the board and he's diagrammed. They're playing the Kings, and he goes, "Okay, guys, here's what's gonna happen on their breakout. Blakey's going to go." He starts kind of hopping around. Blakey's going to get it. He's going to get it with the Gretz, and he's going to swoop around. He's going to do this. And then he goes, everybody's all quiet, kind of like laughing, and Shoney just whacks a board as hard as he can. Like, boom. And everybody kind of jumps. He goes, and I want him fucking dead right here. Chief said, guys, you're just dying. He goes, they scared the shit out of everyone because they didn't expect him to whack the board. I told Shoney that story when I ran into him, somehow I ran into him in Winnipeg. It may have been at the All-Star game. He was American League. He was helping out the American, the Rangers.
Sure. Yeah.
And I told him that story in the elevator. He was dying. He goes, yeah, I did that. He was pretty cool. But speaking of toughness too, real quick talk, cause I know you got to get going, but I was like looking at when you first came in, talk about toughness, Glenn Cochran, Daryl Stanley, Brownie, obviously the Bruise brothers, they had that shirt. I know as a kid, I used to rock that shirt all the time. Holy shit, man. That's a tough team.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. And you know, Rod, you've been on teams where you might've been the only guy in your team. I was lucky, man. We had six or seven deep. I mean, we were, you know, you name those guys, Dave Brown, when Chief got called up, you know,
yeah.
You know, Glenn Cochran, who's, you know, we had, you know, even guys like Lindsey Carson, the Sutter brothers, they would fight, Richie would fight. Like, we had so many guys that would just back you up. Teams were scared. I'm telling you, teams, and you can ask, you know, your dad will tell you this story. You know, teams didn't want the game to go out of hand either way, because they knew if it became 5-1 Flyers, things are going to happen, or if they were losing, which we didn't lose very often, 5-1, but everybody took their share. You know, Dave Brown was obviously the king of the hill there for a lot of years. So to be able to play with that guy and the Stanleys, and it really, I was very lucky. You know, I went to a team that you only had one guy, or, you know, we always talk about, you know, the guy that's a lone guy, he's got the pork chop around his neck.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Yeah.
Lone guy, and you got six guys over there. And Riley, I'm sure you've dealt with those guys.
Yep.
It's hard, man. It's hard. It's a hard thing. So I was, you know, very lucky to play. I think it was one of the toughest teams in the history of hockey that for my 5-6 years there. There were some tough guys. You know, a lot of guys will tell you that it probably one of the toughest teams ever.
Yeah. Because I was going to ask you, because you played with 3 years in junior, and then you turned pro. You played right in the NHL that next year, and you had almost 200 penalty minutes and you know solid point production. But I mean, obviously big difference between fighting, you know, junior hockey players versus fighting men. But obviously, kind of what you're talking about, give you a little confidence knowing that you have a support system of tough guys, and maybe just give you extra confidence coming in. I mean, you're 19 years old. Fighting in the NHL, I mean, and pretty regularly, it looks like. I mean, 184 PIMs. That's not easy to do. You know, I don't think most guys have really ever done that.
Yeah, I was telling that story where an exhibition game against Minnesota, and there was a guy there he had like 500-600 minutes in the year before, and, you know, he was there on a weather just to fight, right? And he's skating around, and he's looking at – everybody's looking at me. You're going to get it. And I my heart's pumping. I'll tell you, I'm 19. You know, whether I don't really use the word scared, but I was like, oh my God, what's going on here? and the game's going to start, and I'm going out there, and I'm like, you know, you got anxiety, right? You know, this guy. And I remember the first shift, Dave Brown went up to this guy, and he broke, you talked about the orbit bone, and broke his orbit bone, knocked this guy out. The guy was done, one shift. And the next shift, I'm like, you know, it's like he just killed the boogeyman, man. So I'm out there and I'm sticking guys, and I'm like, I remember I'm going up to Willie Plett, like hitting Willie Plett and stuff like that. And he's like, man, you know, Willie Plett was a tough guy, but he's like, man, this Dave Brown, you know, he was quiet. So on the ice. So yeah, I remember that. And so when you have a guy like Dave Brown, it makes you 10 feet tall. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, it was impressive, too, with your numbers and everything. I think there was maybe two or three other guys that finished with over 400 goals and over 2,000 penalty minutes. You almost finished with just under 3,000 penalty minutes. But that's tough to do, man. Like, you know, to play that brand of hockey and still put up numbers and stay durable enough. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, you know, fighting wears on you, man. I can't even imagine having to fight as much as you did and still play a legitimate role. I mean, I was just a fourth liner, if that, and know how much it took a toll on my body. But, man, that's impressive. Because I think with Shanny and maybe Gary Roberts, might have been a couple other guys that did that. But that's, man, that's no joke.
Yeah, I think you just, you know, the one thing you try to, you know, you don't want to take stupid penalties, but you try to use intimidation at certain parts of the game, you know, like there's a time and place for it. I know, I remember going into Wash and Jersey and these, you know, Hatcher and, you know, the guys like that and Danico and Stevens, they had, you know, Lyle Oline, those guys were really tough guys. And I remember, you know, and they played, you know, they're good hockey players and they were tough. And you had it's a 1-1 game and it's a tough game. So, you know, usually the games were pretty good. You know, the odd time you get the odd scrap in a 1-1 game, but you know, if one of the teams came out slow in a period, then you know the deal. You know, the next shift, I'm going to the net and I'm going to, you know, cause havoc. And then, you know, the sticks are getting up, you're cross-checking each other. Next thing, the gloves are going off. You're doing that to wake your team up or to wake yourself up. So that's the thing that I prided myself on, is try to use it to the advantage of the team and yourself. You know, yeah. You know, next time I go to the net, maybe that defenseman's not going to be as hard as on me. Maybe he doesn't box me out as quick because he doesn't know what I'm going to do.
Right.
And I might get that goal in front of the net. So a lot of those goals I got were in front of the net because I think sometimes some defense are like, they back off on you.
Yeah, you're unpredictable, right? You don't really know how you're going to act all the time, or they expect it. They think you're going to do something, so they just like lay off. I remember like Steve Downey. I mean, did you coach Steve Downey?
Yeah, I had Downs in Tampa, actually. He actually scored 23 goals or 24 goals for me that year. He had a great year. Him, Marty St. Louis, and Stamkos were a hell of a line. I ended up getting fired the next year, but he was really good that year, you know?
Yeah, he kind of reminded me a little bit of you in the sense that he was, you know, he's tough for his size and, you know, he's a little bit unpredictable, especially when he got a little bit of street credit when he, you know, folded Dean McCowan in half there in preseason. But, you know, I noticed that when I play with him, it was just like, guys are just kind of like unsure what he was going to do. You know, it's like maybe put a stick in your face or jump you. You know what I mean? Even though he wasn't fighting 30 times a year. He was just unpredictable.
Right.
Fucks with guys' minds, you know? And you know, like you just said, they just kind of gives you an extra split second, maybe around the net, make a play or shoot the puck, whatever. But psychology.
Yeah, Downs, I really enjoyed Downs coaching. You know, he had some issues and stuff. And the only thing Downs, he couldn't, you know, when he got to at that level, his wires were crossed. He couldn't get back down. That affected his career, right? Like he couldn't, he just couldn't, you know. I remember in Winnipeg, and he actually had two goals that game, but Bufflin hit him. He was out of control. We were up 5-2, but the game, he was going crazy out there. And Bufflin killed him. And I think it was Devo. I love Devo as a ref. He's divorced. He's one of the best refs. I love him. And he didn't, it's not that he didn't compel you, but all of a sudden he kicked Downey out. And I called Devo. I go, what are you doing? Bufflin just ripped me. He goes, Talk. He came up to me and said, Devo, get me out of the game or I'm going to go bananas out here. So Devo said, I'm doing you a favor. I go, thanks, buddy. Like, oh, yeah. Like Devo came up to me and said, he told me to kick him out because he said he was going to do something real stupid out there.
I'm not surprised. It sounds about right. Yeah, curveball.
I remember we were at a concert, Talk. Remember when he had that little truck? And he had the Canadian flag on a rigs.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Oh,
yeah. Truck? So he's got this truck, and we're in Camden at a concert, and some guys are drinking, and we're leaving, and they chirp him, nice flag. Right in park, Downs jumps out of him.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you doing? He ends up in a Tilly.
Oh, yeah.
He was a beauty,
a loose cannon, yeah.
He was fun to have around, though. I can't let you go talk without mentioning you playing with Mario and Wayne Gretzky. I mean, two of the greatest of all time, obviously. Obviously it's a dumb question, but what was that like?
You know, the one thing with those guys, they respected everybody. You know, those guys respect the tough guy. You know, you know, some of their best friends are tough guys, right? The one thing about those two guys is even keel. You know, they score three goals. Or whether, you know, it's a tough night, there's not a lot of roller coaster in their game and their mindset. And I think that's why during pressure situations, if you watch them, there's not a lot of panic in their game or anxiety, because they replay pressure situations in their mind. Very generous to everybody. I could be here an hour and tell you some of the behind the scenes stuff that they've done, taking care of guys monetarily, with their time, their families. You know, I'm very lucky that to call them buddies of mine. And just even today, the stuff that they do, it's under the radar stuff. But for the game, some of the pressure goals that these, you know, I remember the Canada Cup with Gretz. It was unbelievable when the game was on the line, making that backhand pass through two sticks right onto a guy's tape for an empty, like for a tap in, or you know, Mario, like, you know, I mean, scored a goal in every which way, right? Five. I've seen that. Shoot, you know, how many times he scored behind the, like, he'd shoot the puck off the goalie's pads right in the net. Like, he meant to do that stuff. Very talented, but better, just great human beings. Like, great guys. And, you know, not entourage guys. They don't care about fanfare, and they didn't, You know, they don't have the big people around them. And you know, the one thing I loved about they love getting jacked. You know, they loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
They want awesome. To be one of the guys. You know, yeah. everybody's intimidated, right? Even the trainers, like. But you know, after a while, he wanted guys to chirp him and just say, hey, "I'm part of the team."
That's awesome, man. I've been fortunate enough to meet them both, and they are, like you said, they're just the nicest guys ever, man. I remember when you were with LA, and I think it was my first. It was probably my second year with the Flyers. I was working the visiting room, and I was always excited to see you because I'd known you since I was a kid. You're always so good to me. But you and Wayne were in that. It was actually the Sixers locker room because they would give you guys in the old Spectrum. The rooms weren't that big. So there was a locker room, and then there was the other room. And you and Wayne were in there, and you got me a stick from him. It's, you know, which was unbelievable. But it was funny. We were sitting there kind of talking, and then you said, hey, make sure you tell that 88 down there to take it easy on the moneymaker. I guess you're back. And I started laughing. I said, you have been telling me? He's like, no, I don't tell him, but I don't need him messing around up there with the back, you know, call it the moneymaker. I'll never forget that. I laughed so fucking hard. Tell him to take it easy. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember too, like we won the game, and I remember I took the whole team. I'm not going to say where we went.
Yeah.
But we had a really good time, and Wayne was there. We had a good time, and I remember we actually went on like a 4-game winning streak. That's why I love those team bonding things.
Right.
Because, you know, that's really important. It's funny. I was talking to some reporter. I was on a radio show the other day. We were talking about team bonding and is it effective? And I said, yeah. I said, it's really effective. If it's, you know, you can't always do it, but I think when it's calculated and guys are together, I think it really goes a long way in those games when it's a 2-2 game and you're trying to muscle a game out. And you got everybody pulling the same way. I think it's important.
Yeah. A few years ago. Yeah, exactly. A few years ago, I was still with the team, and we dropped 10 in a row. I mean, that's, and you know, like there's times where there's games you probably deserve to win, but when it's shit snowballing and you find a way to lose. But anyway, we landed in Calgary, and I just remember Jake and G saying, hey, everybody, we're going. You know, we did have a couple of days in between, but we went on a fight. We won every game on the West Coast trip. Yeah. Went 5-0. You know, and I mean, you know, and yeah. I don't think the coaches cared. I think they knew the guys needed to do that. And I know you're that kind of a guy. You like the team bond. You don't have to go out every day and get shit canned, but even to go to lunch with everybody, have a couple of beers, and you know, whatever. I think that's important.
Yeah, you know what's important, Nasty, is you're right. And that's why I really respected guys like Chris Chelios and those type of players, because the next day, they're the first guys in line. You know, they're not – the guys that used to bother me, they hide behind you. They're at the back of the line. They're trying to – you know, they're – and that used to bug me. Like, sometimes, like, I've had players, great guys of mine, where they, hey, let me go first this time. You know, they'd say they knew I was tired. We went out. So you go, hey, I got this one. Let me go first. Like, that to me, that's team bonding. Right. Yep. Like we're all in it together. It's not, you know, are you doing the down and backs, the guys that stop 5 yards before the blue line. And, you know, some coaches didn't say anything. That used to piss me off. Like when I'm a head coach now, like, you know, don't embarrass your teammate. You know, if you're stopping 5 yards and you're beating the guy up the ice because you're getting a head start, you know, you're really all you're just putting the spotlight on that guy, you know? Right. So that's another thing, you know, team bonding, that means on the ice too, having each other's back.
Yeah. I remember when I saw it when last time I was in Arizona, and you were coaching there still, obviously, and we were talking in the hallway, and we were kind of talking about guys like how the game changed a little bit, and you were telling me a funny story. I was like, you kind of came into one of the rooms down at your end, and a couple of the boys were going at it, and you're like, oh fuck, what's going on? You know, what are you japping about? He's like, oh, we were playing our video last night, you know, whatever, Cops and Robbers. I don't even know. I don't play those
Call
things.
Of Duty,
yeah, something, whatever the fuck it is. And talks like, whatever. If I just sit around, well, I thought you guys were actually like Japanese, like having some fun. They're talking about fucking video game. It's fucking crazy. Hey, guys take their headsets, man, and they're playing those things in their rooms on the road, man.
Well, that's why like your phone, like social media, Yeah. You know, it's obviously, it's a good thing for franchises. Because, you know, it's money helps money, and you actually want the fan to see, you know, player express themselves the way they dress. And I love all that stuff, but
yeah,
after games and you're on the team bus and like, it's quiet. You just want a big game and guys are on their phones. Like, you know,
yeah.
You know, I think you got to be careful of that stuff. Right. I mean, enjoy the win right. of your teammates, you know, look at Twitter later to see how, you know, yeah, hey, this yeah. guy sort of, you know, you got 20 people saying, oh, what a great goal by this guy. And they want to read that. Like, I get it. You know, you guys want to see that stuff, but kind of wait a little bit, wait till you get your hotel room, man. Just like enjoy it with the win. So you got to be careful with the phones and the social media, because, you know, it becomes too individual, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's a balance with that stuff.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like connected to something else, and like the priority has been connected to the teammates and to the situation and the present moment, right? It's the win.
Right.
Yeah, there's a fine line there. It's an amazing tool, like you said. I struggle with this myself personally. It's right. It's a business tool, but you can get swallowed sure. up in it, and then you're disconnected from what really matters. It's, you know, paying more attention to your children, or, you know, actually being out in the community and talking to people, right? But yeah, it's a drug, you know. There has to be a respect towards it, right? And use it the right way, because then you don't have to have the big hurrahs all the time to get guys together and communicate, right? It's like you do that every single day, and then you maybe
right, yeah.
have more like success. You said,
you're connected, like you said, connected. Present. You're connected presently. Yeah, I agree with you there for sure.
Right on. Well,
that's awesome, man.
I know we've taken up a good chunk of your time.
Of your time. I could keep talking to you forever, Tom. Yeah, man. You know that, man. But
I'll be honest with you, this is stuff I miss. You know, it's you know, there's nothing like, you know, reminiscing with guys that you know and respect, and you know, over the years, it's you know, it's almost like that happy hour. You know, sitting around, you're telling stories, and because yeah. that's the one thing you can't, you know, listen. Everybody has their different paths, but you know, you still have those memories and those funny things, and they keep you going. And and their experiences too. You learn from these experiences and these memories too. So it makes you a better person. But I've always enjoyed talking to anybody in the NHL or anybody just about stories and, you know, asking their opinions on stuff. So it's always fun to reminisce with guys like yourself or whoever, NHL guys or trainers. And I've been, you know, nasty being on, I'm a huge trainer, guys. That's the one thing, like, I got to admit, like, the one thing in Arizona, I was lucky, I had a great staff there. Wow. You know, there's a lot of tough times there, and there's nothing better than you have a training staff that, as a coach, got your back, or even a player, that they're part of the team. You know, you know, I always used to laugh, like, you know, NASA, I don't know, like, they should be involved with team bonuses, man. You're part of the team. Like, I never understood with some teams, they didn't have trainers included, or they had to share between, you know, one playoff share between 10 trainers. You know, you're getting a sliver, right? they're part of the team, man. They live and die by what we do. Right. And they make your life very, very comfortable. So I'm a, you know, I didn't mean to say the hockey player. I mean everybody that's associated with hockey.
Yeah, that's the part I missed too. I know we were talking on the phone the other day. We were kind of touching on that. That's one of the biggest things I do miss. I'm enjoying myself, and things happen for a reason. Yeah. But I do miss that part of it. So we were going to talk for 2 minutes, and we ended up talking for 45, just shooting the show. That's just what happened, right? But we really do talk. We know you're busy, man. We appreciate you so much for taking the time out for us, man.
No problem, man. Enjoyed it. Anytime. We'll do it again.
All right. We're going to get you a chief on. So you can right? get it to him. Hey, and you know what? That reminds me, Riles. I didn't tell you this, Riles, real quick. When I was a kid, I used to come up visit my dad a couple times a year. So I'm not sure if it was an optional skate or you had already showered, talked. You were playing. Chief was not playing. He was not going to play that night. So Chief's doing some drills. God bless him, man. He's out there trying to work on some things. And I'm on the visiting bench in the spectrum, and Talk's standing there. We'll be talking. And we're just shooting the shit real quick. You probably don't remember this, Talk, but you took your keys out of your pocket. You went, hey, Chief, here you go. And he's dangling his keys. And Chief's like, you know, no teeth. What the fuck? What the fuck is that? And he goes, some keys for those handcuffs you're wearing. So you stick out. And he fires a puck over. And I'm like, I don't think Chief knows where that thing's going, man.
Oh, man.
That's good. That's the shit you miss, man.
Yeah.
That's before we go, I'm going to leave you this last story. Like, it's my classic Chief and Keith Jones. We're playing Jersey in the playoffs. Big, huge game. And it's 2-2 game. Chief goes through the slot. He deflects the winning goal, right, with a minute and 10 seconds or 20 seconds, right? And I'm on the bench. I go bananas. Like, we're hugging each other. It's like, you know, we're going to win the game. Like, to go up 3-1 against Jersey, right?
Yeah.
And I'm hugging guys. Luke Richardson, we're hugging each other. I go to hug Jonesy, and he looks at me, and he looks at Craig Ramsey. He goes, what's he doing on the ice? I never laugh so hard. Like, everybody's cheering each other, and Jonesy's like, hey, Rammer, what's he doing on the ice? And I love that story. And I can't. I told Chief after the game, and he goes, yep, that's Jonesy.
That's Jonesy. Oh, he man. So fucking funny, man. Oh, my God. I didn't know that one. That's what
that's
I
That's a good
heard.
One.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Very funny story.
Fucking Jonesy. He's a beauty, man. Holy shit.
No doubt.
Oh, man. But thanks, Talk.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
Also, hey, good luck to TNT, man.
We'll do it again. For sure. Okay. Nasty, I'll talk to you. Riley, good talking to you, buddy. Yeah.
All right, take care. All right, brother.
That episode was brought to you by SettleMyerSkateSharpening.com. Visit D Nasty for the best grind in town and all your hockey needs at SettleMyerSkateSharpening.com. And for all your wellness needs, functional mushroom, CBD needs, bodycheckwellness.com. And big thank you to the Rocket, Rick Tockett, for hopping on. What a beauty. Amazing career.
What a wheel.
Yeah, what a wheel. Well, amazing coaching career. Now he's on to a different dimension of his hockey career. I mean, he's got a ton of experience on and off the ice, and now he's going to be with some of the best to do it in the studio with Wayne Gretzky, Paul Bissonnette, Anson Carter, and whoever else they plug in along the way. But TNT. Pretty awesome gig he's got going on there, and appreciate him coming on.
Yeah, man, it's awesome. And dude played 1,144 games in NHL, man. No like, doubt. The guy's still jacked, too.
Yeah,
he is jacked out of his mind. He looks like he'd still play. And oh, the knees, and as he would call his back, the moneymaker, probably aren't able to do it. But yeah, well, I mean, he looks like he's in great shape.
Yeah,
he's so jacked, man. It's just so funny. Seeing him come down the hall and talking to him when I was still in the game, and he looked better than the players. He's just so jacked, you know.
Yeah.
Great guy, man. I thought it was cool how he talked a little bit about reaching out to other coaches when he was coaching.
Yeah,
obviously just a few. You're not gonna, but his good buddies. It's a pretty cool thing. And Chief always says that, you know, they'd run stuff by each other. You know, just. They both have staffs that they obviously use, but it's just probably good to do that a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I think it's always a good thing to ask questions and bounce ideas off people. Right. I mean, it's one of those interesting jobs where there is the element of creativity, right? There is certain things that, you know, you can change, or you can make it your own, that if it doesn't work or if it does work, you can adjust. And obviously, we talked about it. It's a game of psychology, right? What worked with this guy, what didn't work with this guy, and how can we adjust? And I think talking things through with buddies and other coaches is always a good thing. So I'm not surprised that he does that. It's always kind of like looking for more information so you can, you know, shift and adjust and make your team better, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, you're right. Great to talk to him, man.
He's
just one of the, there's some people that you talk to, and we could have gone on forever.
Oh yeah.
For this guy. I mean,
talk 2.0.
Just knowing him for so long. He was so good to me as a kid, man. Like, you know, when I'd come up, him and Chief were my favorite two guys, because they were just Talk always makes people feel part of something.
Yeah.
You know, you could go play with him and not know him like around a golf, and he would make you feel so comfortable. He's just such a nice guy, and I love the dude, man. He's an awesome man.
Yeah, that's why he's a leader. He's a leader on the ice. He's a leader, obviously, in the coaching world, assistant and head, and you still see him as a leader, right? I mean, he's got a voice. Yeah. He speaks well. He knows the game, obviously.
from every dimension. Like you said in the pod, he played fourth line, third line, second line, first line, assistant coach. I mean, he's seen it all. So he's got a grasp on what's going on. So wish him the best in his new venture. You know, it might not be a forever play, but it's certainly a good position for him because, as we just mentioned, great speaker, knows the game, and offered time to the hockey world.
I know, and in the way he was explaining it to me, he's having a blast. He's like, so far, he said it was actually fun. They treat him like $1 million, and all first class there with TNT. So that's awesome too. You know, going into something new and being treated that way, it's got to make it a little bit easier for you. You know,
that's it.
But I got a feeling he'll be coaching again.
I think so too.
I have that feeling. He's so competitive, man.
Yeah. He's got the hunger for it still, too, right? I mean, he talks about, like, you know, that's what he wanted to do and didn't work out. There's only so many coaching jobs available every offseason. So just got to be patient and stay in the game, stay visible, right? Stay engaged, talking about it, and that's what he's doing. So obviously in that role, too, you have a lot of conversations with different teams, general managers, you know, scouts and all that other stuff. So you're really engaged more than most people think, staying in the game, so... Sure, we'll see him pop up sooner than later.
Yep, that's right.
That's right. All right, Nas. Well, brother. Yeah, that's episode 44 in the books.
Bam, my number.
Turn in next week for episode 45. And until then, enjoy some hockey. Stay safe.
Yeah.
See you then, knuckleheads. Well,
see you, knuckleheads.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.